welcome to the Luminaries In and Out of Sect podcast, a show about the sun and how astrologers embody and relate to it. My name is SB Hall, and I'm your host. In today's episode on the Capricorn Sun as the Sect Light, I speak with the brilliant astrologer, Oscar Moises Díaz. I'm really excited to be dropping this next episode of my new Sun series, which will continue for the next year. For new listeners, please go back and listen to the Moon series that I've been doing over the last year, where I spoke to different astrologers about their moon sign. These Capricorn Sun episodes are particularly important for me, as I'm also a Capricorn Sun native. So happy birthday to all my fellow Capricorns out there. If you're listening to this episode on the day it's released, Monday, January 8th, Oscar is doing a talk today for the Aquarian Organization of Astrologers on love and astrology. That will take place from 7 to 9 p.m. And I believe the organization is based in Kansas, so I think that's central time. I provided a link in the show notes to sign up for that. In addition, therein you can find a link to a Mountain Astrologer article that Oscar wrote, which is a conversation between him and past Luminaries In and Out of Sect guest, Dr. Ali Alomi. As always, if you enjoy the work that I'm doing, please contribute to the podcast's sustainability by becoming a supporting member or offering a one-time donation on my website. There you can also find information on my services. I'm offering natal and timing consultations, as well as answering horary questions. Hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, Oscar Díaz, thank you so much for being with me here today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me. I'm super excited to talk today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk with you as well. First thing I like to jump into is, well, I've noticed with the Sun series, it wasn't something I actually thought about, but like doing people's sun signs means that it's like around their birthday. So happy belated birthday to you. We're just a few days apart because I'm also a Capricorn Sun, mm-hmm. born on Christmas. So happy birthday to you. How has the recent astrology been for you, or how have things been for you? I'm not even really sure what's going on. I think Mercury was retrograde in Sag. So yeah, what's been going on? How has it been going for you?
Just sort of feeling right, the solar return shift. I mean, yeah, my birthday's so close to the solstice. A lot of people in most of the people in my family are born like in late December through early January. So actually it's just like, I feel like I haven't had a time to sort of be digestive, because like every day it feels like I'm at a party mm-hmm. for someone's birthday, because all of us refuse to share a cake, which is kind of great. And we also, yeah, we won't do the double present thing either. So I feel like I'm still in that. Like my sister's birthday is on the 5th and she's sort of like the tail end of that. So mm-hmm. for me, it's been a lot of like really good food, leftovers in the like really rich, like leftovers in the morning, like mm-hmm. and I guess that's sort of wintry, right? Like sort of thinking about like resources, like I don't know, the fridge is like, oh, this place where there's like, you know, a lot of like things that are like will hold us over right until the next mm-hmm. party. And yeah, I guess like I'm always thinking about the shifts into winter and sort of like what winter means and like what winter forces us to do. Actually, one thing I could say is like rest. And I feel like we're going to talk about that today in the context of our conversation. But yeah, thinking about like, you know, winter and like how it kind of forces you to stop, right? Like you can wake up the next morning and see like the landscape outside your window completely change and become totally white with snow. And then you maybe have to like plow your way through, you know, or like mm-hmm. the way that winter can be disruptive, or so it can sort of force you to sort of stop your business as usual and sort of like slow down. There's a lot of like slowing down that happens around this time. And I usually never work December, so like those shifts feel a little more comfortable, but I decided to work December this year. And I realized, oh, I kind of don't like that. Like, because it got in the way of like the richness of like the year slowing down for me. And I was like, oh wait, it's like I can't slow down actually. So I'm still waiting for that part of it, but it made it sort of like super, I don't know, it was just this awareness of like, you know, nature around me is like adapting and shifting its processes, but I'm like, kind of steady going all day.
Yeah, that's really interesting, this idea of the solstice, or like Christmas, as not to say that, you know, everybody celebrates Christmas, but like the festival of lights component, this idea of light in the dark. You know, I'm not super aware about like pagan, you know, or even like kind of pre-modern pagan rituals around the solstice, but this idea of, in astrology, even of like the sun kind of dying and being reborn, because it's at its, you know, the day is the shortest. So it's like perhaps the sun is least in power. If we think about kind of like that Antitia thing, equal light as like a relation of power in relation to the sun. But like there's an interesting correlation between that festival of lights thing and that kind of hibernating and eating, and like what's holding us over.
Yeah.
In interesting ways.
And that's been super cool to see, like, happening to plants and animals outside my window, actually, like in the small moments where I'm like not running around, like, you know, like animals and plants, they don't pretend it's not going on, like,
right?
Because if they did, they wouldn't survive. So I'm already sort of like here with the Saturn and the malefic sort of, like, you know, you can feel that vibe of winter too, of like, you know, we have to maximize like scant resources, like you said, or like hibernate, or when we do go out, you know, maybe to chop wood, we have to be like brutally effective, so like we don't get frostbite or something. So it's like this, like, kind of like facing the sort of landscape and the tundra and sort of being effective, but also like seeing it not just as like a place where stuff is dying, but also, like you said, like the light transforming. You know, sort of like there's this quote, or like this author I've been reading, who wrote a book about winter, Catherine May, and she has this wonderful just like sentence where she's like, winter is not the death of light of the life cycle, but it's crucible. So like the crucible being like this place where stuff transforms. It makes you think of like the goat and the tail, and it's like, ha, maybe winter is where we find a sort of liminal entry point into like the fishy tail of Capricorn, you know, like the solstice sort of marking like, right, this very sort of maybe liminal door in sort of our calendar. And what happens when you walk through that is like an estrangement, and maybe sort of like various invitations to step out of the ordinary, and sort of go into these places that are unseen, and right through that process, like learning about yourself and maybe realizing, wow, I have this like fishtail, and where'd that come from, you know?
Yeah. Do you want to stay with that and just kind of start talking about Capricorn, or would you like to kind of go back and give a bit of an introduction to yourself?
Oh yeah. We've already gotten carried away.
Which I love. That's great.
But
let's take a step back. And who are you? Tell us about your practice. Tell us about who you are as a person. And
sure. So my name is Oscar Moises Diaz. I'm an astrologer and a poet. I kind of am, you know, bridging like the Hellenistic tradition. Like my first teacher was Chris Brennan, and like Demetra George, and like all of their classes and texts. And then like, you know, got into the medieval tradition through a lot of like astrologers, like in Spain, actually. And like,
interesting.
That's also been like bridged through, like, of course, like Dr. Lomi is probably like my greatest teacher. I kind of like started super traditional. So like, I guess I am aware faintly of like, you know, what Pluto might mean or something, but like, it's really sort of like old stuff for me. And that's sort of, maybe that's like my lot of fortune in Gemini. That's angular in the terms of Saturn, right? And like, you know, so it's like, I'm really fascinated by that. And like, the tradition
with the
and
old
sort of
things.
Speaking of like Saturn and stuff, it reminds me of Ibn Ezra, who's like, right, this medieval astrologer who I teach a lot. And I also like, I teach his poetry, but I also teach like his astrological techniques sometimes. And yeah, he's like a Jewish astrologer from like Muslim, like Spain, like in Andalus. And like, he's writing about like, He says this really interesting thing where he says like an astrologer's like greatest tool is like besides the ability to calculate and the math and all the technical stuff is actually something he calls nesayum, which is like a Hebrew word for like all of the things that are passed down to you through generations, right? And you have that great podcast episode with Dr. Elomi actually where you talk about the Saturn sides of astrology and it's like sort of like Nesayim being like the little grains of sand that a life gives. You know, it's like I think that's something I've been thinking about this winter too, is like I need a new sort of filing cabinet because all of like my client folders are getting kind of like beefy and like nothing's fitting. And I'm like, oh, these are like the workbooks, right? Like or like the it's like I'll die and I'll be like, I don't know, 80 years old or something, and then like I'll have left like these like weird like folders of just like 50 years of a client's life or something, but it's like
Yeah, the
who's
book of
gonna
their
learn from
life.
that? You know, it's like that's the accumulation, Saturn being like the illuminator, but through time. And I've
That's such
already
an
sort of
interesting
taken us.
that's such an interesting image, like the illuminator through time, because we think of Saturn as like the darkness almost opposite the luminaries. So there's this kind of illumination, the time component of illumination rather than the immediacy of the sun or the moon, even. That feels really, I don't know, that feels very potent.
I hope I answered your first question. It was about like lineage and like, right, that's why I got into the whole Ibn Ezra thing. So yeah, lineage is really important to me, and I would agree with him. Like, you know, we stand on the shoulders of like people who have done this for thousands of years, and what is their like sort of empirical gatherings and like you know, you can see, and actually thinking about time, thinking about winter, like having to organize that filing cabinet of my clients, it's like thinking about like approaching half a decade almost of like an astrological full-time practice, like looking
Incredible.
at actually, like I finished on the 31st with my first client ever. And it was like, so she's been seeing me for a couple of years and she's the first client I ever had. And I remember that. And it's so funny because I have her like, you know, various solar return charts, all that stuff in a folder. And it's like I look at the first chart I ever prepared for her, and it was like very basic, like the ruler of the ascendant, and like really like talking about notes about sect and like, you know, like and then kind of progressing through the pages and being like, oh, now I'm talking to you about like primary directions, like Fedaria, like the Lord of the Turn, like, and you start to sort of see that sort of the unraveling of like time and experience and wisdom and sort of becoming more shorthanded, right? Like those charts just have calculations. I'm no longer like writing paragraphs of notes and like
And I'm sure for your client as well, they've also progressed with you. They can follow, they can follow that shorthand and follow that, like those more complex perhaps techniques. So that must be really special.
Yeah, you're gonna have to rein me in. I'm already like the queen of tangents. It's already like I love the scenic route. So if I get off, you're gonna
Okay, I'll do
have
my
that.
best. I also like We both have a bunch of sad stuff, so we might go off on a tangent.
You know,
It's
thinking about
okay.
Capricorn and the sun, like and maybe this question of like, did I always identify as a Capricorn? Like, what do I think about sun sign astrology? You know, I never really, I mean, there was stuff like, okay, like I was always a serious child. Like, I tell this story where like for like a lot of like my birthdays and adolescence, like as a like elementary, like I would cry at my birthday. Like they would bring the cake out and I would be mortified and people would start singing like happy birthday. Because like as a child, I was just like, oh, that means I'm like closer to dying. And I would say that to like my parents or whoever, like, and they didn't know what to say to me. And they were like, who is this like goth child, like hyper aware of death and like aging? And I was just like really upset. I was like, I don't want to see this cake. I don't want to like think about my weathering existence. And this is me at like 7 years old. And like, and so yeah, I think like I always got the things about like being serious and like sort of like the odd one or like the black sheep sort of thing. And I think about that a lot, you know, like Capricorn being sort of like the exaltation of Mars, but also like the home of Saturn, and sort of like this way that like malefics will often bring experiences of like pushing us to the edges of places or
Yeah.
peripheries, but also experiences of being othered. So I think like, you know, like anytime someone had something meme-like or something to say about Capricorn, it was like stuff about like, oh, introversion, like privacy, like I never got the CEO stuff or like being money hung. That was like the most alienating thing. That was like almost the stuff that made me like not want to know more. It was just like, why are people saying all this stuff about me being like
For me
chasing
too,
the
because
cash or something?
yeah, for me too, it's so interesting because I'm a Sag rising, so I have my Capricorn sun in the second, pretty widely conjunct Saturn, Saturn being my malefic out of sect. And so I think with that Saturn sun combination for me, it's almost like no, like saying no to things, saying no to like money, almost even like money can feel like a burden. Or just like Saturn in my life kind of saying no to those things sometimes. So it's just interesting how sect can play in and how you know, like we both have kind of Jupiterian risings and how there can be like it's kind of tension between Jupiter and Saturn sometimes because like you know, Jupiter wants to say yes to things and Saturn wants to say no in its kind of ways. And I guess I just want to point out one thing because it comes to mind for like newer listeners who are maybe not familiar with sect or what like malefics are. The malefics, I will say, the malefics are the malefics because they tend toward extremity, with Mars tending towards hotness and dryness, and Saturn tending towards extreme coldness and dryness. And so Saturn is like the one that's far out. Traditionally, it's like the last planet. It's the last planet we can really see. So there's this kind of isolation that's associated with Saturn. And then there's like Mars, which is like the individual, which will cut away. So there's these ways that the malefics like say no to things, and the ways that they can be extreme in a way that can make life difficult. You know, like it's like very little life exists in extremely cold places or extremely hot places. Like it happens, but there's a kind of way that those creatures have to exist to kind of adapt to those elements. And sect can play in as well. And so it's just interesting to hear your experience with, you know, you having a day chart. So the sun has this, you know, interesting to hear your thoughts on sect and what that kind of means for the luminaries. But this, perhaps the sun has an increased prominence or an increased ability to kind of do what it wants, or there's a more of a prioritization than the sun, than the moon, you know, what have you. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But I just wanted to kind of like point out a few of those things to kind of set the stage a little bit or kind of fill in some of the details, perhaps.
I kind of want to add to that too, because I love that you're
Yeah,
talking
please.
about like these kind of like cold and dry qualities. I feel like that's very sort of underspoken in a lot of like astrological conversations. Like the idea of like right temperament, you know, like thinking about Capricorn being sort of like of the melancholic nature because it's associated with Earth and like you know, like what's that imply? Like the melancholic temperament is sort of like pragmatic, it's realistic, you know, it's like don't sell me these big hopes and dreams thing. Like what is the realistic sort of look of you know, and like sort of having like lead a sort of like realism lead the way. You
I
know,
think
like
that's why Saturn can also be associated with like the actual reality of things. Like what are the facts and figures? Because it's like, you know, you can't really, you know, you can manipulate Earth to a degree, but there's less kind of mutability of Earth or like changeability of Earth than say like water, for example.
But and it's also like the most adaptable of the earth sign. Well, it's adaptable in the sense that like more so than like Taurus, right? Because it's cardinal. So it's also like, so like what is the lay of the land? What are the difficulties? Let's not sugarcoat that, but like what is actually then possible? You know, it's like wanting to transform, like I guess it's like that metamorphosis that like the winter time can help bring, you know, and sort of like, right. So like again, the melancholic temperament sort of like being deliberate and self-paced. There's this funny story about Sade that I always like to
I
tell.
love Sade.
Yeah, she was talking about, she rarely gives interviews. She's very private, another sort of Capricornian thing. She saw like an advertisement with her photo on it, like somewhere in New York City. So it was like big and blown up on the street. And someone had like written in marker on like you know, on top of her poster. And someone had written, this bitch only sings when she wants to. And then she said that with such a like joyous smile, and then she says, that's one of my favorite things. That like I loved seeing someone like complain about me in that way. She was like that idea, right? Like, you know, like the melancholic person, the Capricornian person, like they go at their pace. It's like you're not gonna force them necessarily to move. It's sort of like they have that sort of, I don't know, like that great like and right, she disappears, right, for a long time. Like those albums are so sporadic, but like again, like the coldness and the dryness separating.
And kind of the pride in saying no as well, the pride in kind
Yeah.
of refusal. But just for video watchers, I'm sharing Sade's chart. It's an untimed chart, born January 16th, 1959. So yeah, she has quite Saturnian,
Oh yeah,
Saturn in
wow.
Capricorn, Mercury in Capricorn, Sun in late Capricorn, the last decan, and then Venus in Aquarius. So quite kind of Saturnian person.
Yeah, I faintly knew her chart, but like this is so wonderful to see. I mean, yeah, like the sort of like the music is so like controlled and like deliberate. Like you can tell like she really labors with her band like to create something special, but like she has to retreat to do it. I think that's like that's winter, that's melancholic, that's Capricornian, that's Saturnian, like that retreat becomes sort of essential for a lot of like, you know, the sun to sort of have those moments of gnosis and knowing and understanding and sort of an embodiment, you know, I think, right? I don't know if you relate to that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I do want to touch on first, though, maybe before going into that, is just this idea of temperament before I lose it. And the sun sometimes getting this kind of malefic classification, because the sun, like Mars, is like most kind of closely associated with fire, and is hot and dry. And like, even, the dignities don't always line up with kind of temperament or triplicity or what have you, but like the sun rules Leo, the sun is exalted in Aries, so has these kind of strong dignities in two out of three of the fire signs. And I think that is just, interesting kind of jumping off place for what does the sun mean astrologically? What does it mean in terms of like planetary relationship in relation to the sun? Like, how close can we get to the sun? Things of that nature. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that. And then, like, as it relates to Capricorn, what does this kind of hot, dry planet mean when it's in this very kind of cold, dry environment?
Yeah, I mean, I always think about this like this thing where like the sun, I mean the sun is like order, it's an organizing sort of thing. It's like also has to, you know, it's sort of like the planet that's in between the two outer Saturn and Jupiter and then the sort of inner planets. So like medieval astrologers would see the sun as sort of like the bridging of the collective and the personal. And
Yeah,
like
and
I
just for listeners that maybe don't understand that, in reference to the Chaldean order, which is like our kind of pre-heliocentric model of the solar system, the sun was actually between Jupiter and Mars, correct? Or between Mars and Venus?
Yeah, Mars and Venus, I think.
Right, there we go, between Mars and Venus. So the sun was not the center, it was the Earth was the center, and the sun was part of this Chaldean order, which went from, the moon to Saturn.
Yeah. And so like that gets into these ideas of like ensoulment, you know, like they would say that like your soul would like have to pass through the realm of the sun and sort of be cleansed, and sort of like ensoulment would happen, you know? So like there's like this really, I mean, I always, it changed so much for me, the sun, from going from just maybe this thing about like ego or like the self or like stuff about like being self-centered. I mean, yeah, like there's some, that could be a thing that plays into it, but I think the most enriching understanding, the thing that's been most enriching about pushing my understandings of the sun, has been sort of like this explicit relationship to the soul. You know, like okay, here's like philosophy brain, get ready. But
Yeah,
like, I don't
please.
know, like one of my favorite philosophy professors, Peter Adamson, I didn't study directly, but I read a lot of his books, and he talks about like Plotinus as like the philosopher of awareness. And I love that. Like the sun is like this thing that's aware of everything, you know, like nothing escapes the light of the sun. It creates shadows. Like also the sun nurtures when it's far away, but like if you get too close, that's sort of like where the maleficness is. It's like it's too burning, it's too drying. You know, Abu Mishar gives us a scale, you know, says like planets that are like wet, like Venus and the moon, like they suffer the most from the proximity to the sun, you know, like it dries them up. But someone like Mars, you know, have a Sun Mars conjunction, like Mars is already sort of dry, you know, and sort
Yeah,
of like,
Mars is like chilling.
yeah. And like so like there's like this thing where like doesn't really affect Mars, and also Mercury's changeable. So Mercury, it's like it happens all the time, it's just adaptable. But the Sun Mars part is interesting because, right, there's that whole famous line from Abu Mishar about like sharpening the blade in secret. So like yeah, but yeah, the sun and the soul. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this because like they relate the sun to prophets a lot. They relate the sun to like the children of the sun are like physicians. You know, so like there's like stuff where like both of those figures might deal with the unseen, right? Like a physician's trying to see what's wrong, like what germs are giving you that flu, like what are the symptoms, what are sort of the things. And you know, there's this medieval thinker Al-Farabi who like he says, like he talks about like celestial intellects as like, you know, the seven heavenly spheres and all of that, and like he links the sun to prophecy. And Al-Farabi has this like idea that like a prophet is someone whose mind is like fully actualized, like the active intellect, and then can share that knowledge with the rest of the world. And he says like you might read medieval texts where like they say the sultan is the sun, and that might be kind of strange, right? Like why do they say that? But it kind of comes from this sort of stuff about like Al-Farabi also says like, right, like the sultan should be sort of is like the sun in the sense that like cities are very specific. So I might have a city that's like in the mountains, or a city by like a river that floods often, and like so like cities have specific conditions, and he says like a good ruler would be a ruler that's aware of like the city's specific needs and how the city needs to adapt from time to time for the greater good. And so there's like this
Interesting.
idea with like the sun and kingship, and but like again, like through like awareness, right? Like through being aware that like, oh, we've built this city in a place that floods half of the year, so like maybe we should have some levees or something. But it's like again, like leadership and sort of like the sun as a delegator, or sort of like a commanding organizing figure, right, needing to be kind of like aware of things. And I always think about like, yeah, like these layers of like the soul, awareness, intellect, nous, gnosis, like, and the sun, and sort of like a lot of that's kind of hard to explain. Like, you know, like some things we can know, but we can't necessarily like, because there's like direct ways of knowing, and like that's sort of like mysterious. I mean, that I think that's why I find a lot of sun sign memes really kind of fun. They often come from people's personal experience of that. So like
Yeah.
it might be like a Capricorn meme that's really funny. Like my favorite one is this person who's like they have like a nail in their heart, and they're like on a stretcher, and it's like something about like how a Capricorn won't ask for help or something. And I'm like, only someone whose sun sign is that could probably say that. But like Again, like the sun and that sort of like direct knowing through again the experience of something. So thinking about the sun, I'm going around the mountain tying it together. Thinking about the sun as like the planet between like the two outer Saturn and Jupiter, and then like sort of the inner planets, like this bridge across is like I think about the sun and like whatever sign it's in and its relationship to the ruler, maybe sort of these things that were like also showing other people, you know, like these ways of being or sort of like these archetypes or something. You know, like there's this whole thing about like Plotinus says like the soul is like on the horizon of the bodily and the intelligible. So like there's like something there about like again the sun and like the way you like organize your life and sort of like the way you live it and experience it. And like, yeah, that's it makes me think about like, you know, concepts of like, and Dr. Lomi has spoken about this as like deen, you know, in Islam, which is like, you know, like, or the way we organize our life and like, what does that mean to you? You know, like for me, Capricorn's a lot about like duty and like, you know, and all these other things, you know, or might be for me, you know, so like,
I definitely relate to that.
it's like, what is this creed or like this thing that we're sort of organizing our lives by, you know, that sort of so sort of the heart, you know, is like the sun maybe, you know? Yeah.
I just want to say for the record that one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Capricorn memes is I think it's not all Geminis, and it's Dennis from It's Always Sunny drinking, and it's Capricorn. It just says pessimism, and I love that for some reason.
Yeah, they're, you know, it's funny, like sometimes you'll read like English translations of medieval texts and I'll say like evil thoughts for like Saturn or like Capricorn, and like that's also like goes into the melancholic temperament sometimes of like sometimes like being too like pragmatic and realistic is like sometimes you expect because you're expecting negativity, sometimes that's also thing that leads you to leave the realism behind also because that's also shutting doors of like things working out or something like because you're because like right sometimes the pessimism can just like also be a thing that clouds you know it's like there's like some funny medieval astrologers who write the stuff about like Saturn and Capricornians and like them sort of being suspicious of others sometimes or like overly so and sometimes that being like a bad thing you know it's like
But it comes to mind also that like there are positive elements to it as
yes.
well, because it's like often you see like you cannot fix something if you don't know what's wrong with it. And I think like the pessimistic or kind of like limiting element of Saturn in relation to the earth, you know, like this kind of earth element of Capricorn, it's like where are the issues? Like what needs to be refurbished or like reconstituted? You know, and like the an example of this in relation to like my thinking, as like the sun in Capricorn relates to just like thought or knowledge or what have you, is you know, you talking about it snowing, and the first thing that came to mind is like you can help other people shovel out their snow. You know what I mean? It's like, and if you don't have that experience of like, fuck, I'm snowed in, and you don't like you can't know. Oh, like my neighbor down, the old lady down the street can't get out to get her groceries because she's snowed in. And it's like there's a pro-social element to negative thinking in a way.
And I love that too. Yeah, we're like in the same wave, like I feel it because right, like because you know how much it sucks to be snowed in, right? You're thinking about the old lady down the street. And like that is sort of like this thing about like the sun and sort of like what are you like if we're thinking about the sun as like the sort of like unified locus of awareness, like what is the sun aware of when it's wearing the Capricorn sort of outfit? Like it's aware of like people who have been left behind. That's very sort of explicit in medieval Islamic and astrological texts, like you'll read, and it might seem mysterious when it's in English of like, what do they mean when like Saturn is the stranger or like the forgotten? You know, like there's a famous like electional rule from al-Isfahani where like if the moon's in Capricorn, you should go send messages to the forgotten. And it's like, you don't have the context, you're just like, what, like my
What is
sister who I forgot to text yesterday?
yeah.
But no, they mean like, you know, who has society forgotten, or who is like easy to forget in society. So like that would be, you know, these connections Capricorn has, which are very ancient and like stretch back to Babylon, with like the differently abled, or like the poor, or the hungry, or the widowed, or the old, you know, like people who you know, I guess like in our current sort of global situation, yeah, are like suffer even more and more, like, but like thinking about like Saturn or Saturnians or Capricornian people, like having sort of this special awareness, or sort of just like this natural awareness of like folks who fit into those categories, and sort of like, right. And so I think that's so beautifully illustrated with you making this example of like, shit, my like house is snowed in, but what about this elder down the street? Like, these are sort of like the sun in Capricorn sort of concerns, you know, like what is this awareness that you're bringing, right?
Yeah, and again, to kind
This
of think
knowing,
of,
right? And knowing is so complicated to talk about, right? It's such a philosophical, like, big area.
Absolutely. And especially when you talk about the astrologer that you referenced that talked about the horizon, it reminds me of Mercury's joy in the first, this place where the kind of sky and earth meet. And there's so much about astrology that's connecting sky and earth, you know, like as above, so below, this kind of thing. And I really think it's interesting to think about the relation of like the sun and all the other planets, because and perhaps it's just like my modern view of like the solar system of the sun as the center, which is very different from this kind of pre-modern Chaldean order. But it's like, yeah, how does the sun relate to Mercury? How does the planet of like thinking, for you know, just a shorthand, relate to the planet of communication? Like, how does Mercury herald the decrees of the sun? And so it's, I think it's interesting to look at the relationship between those things, because like, you know, for you, for example, it's, you have this you know, with the sun in Capricorn, you have this particular way of thinking, and then perhaps that's very different based on your, you know, how that comes through with the Mercury placement.
Yeah, and Sag, yeah, I think they're in Antitia. That's a whole other thing, but there's this wonderful thing Ibn Ezra says in one of his poems. He says like the scribe is always aware of where the king is in the castle, and so like again, it's him using poetry as like this vehicle to put it in knowledge and then sort of make it digestible, right? Like that's such a great line, right? It sort of says like you can think you can think about like Mercury's cycle and its relationship of retrograding with the sun, entering the beams, you know, Kazemi, like that whole thing, like, and it sort of speak, you know, he's sort of like saying like, yeah, like the scribe is always aware, and that awareness being like the Mercury will adapt, you know. That's why like a retrograde Mercury is seen as a very minor affliction in like most of like the history of astrology. Even like it being under the beams is like what, you know, it's like Mercury will is aware of where the king is in the castle, so like kind of knows how it goes and sort of will change and adapt. And sort of like I think that poetic line in his poem like really speaks to sort of like this relationship with the sun and Mercury, that's actually like, you know, Mercury making room and space, and sort of it's gonna figure it out, you know. It's not like a major deal, but also like I bring up poetry because like, right, that goes into like, you know, these medieval ideas around like the sun and the imagination and prophethood. So like, right, like a prophet I said earlier was someone who like is like fully actualized and has the stuff from like the active intellect and is sharing with people, but like how are they sharing it? Usually through images, you know. So like through like poetry or sort of stories or sort of like, you know, images or symbols to communicate like these really heady things. And so like, you know, like I, you know, that's like pedagogical, you know. So like sometimes like when a student isn't understanding something, you might want to tell them like a little anecdote or a story or sort of like something like that, because it gives like the mind something to play with, right? And the sun is related to like intellect and nous, but it's like it gives that participation moment, or like that sort of like let me chew on that image that you gave me for this one thing. It's like where that noetic click happens, where like that light bulb moment happens of like, oh, the image was the vehicle for the information to sort of digest and sort of turn on a light where like, I get that now, you know? So I always think about also like the sun, and it's like sort of like, you know, things with like how knowledge seeps through us through like the sort of like experiential sort of ways. Like, I mean, some astrological texts like relate the sun with actors. I think Lily does that. Can't believe I'm citing Lily. That's so weird. but like, yeah, the, you know, like thinking about how an actor can embody or mimic others, you know, it's like stepping into someone else's shoes or sort of someone else's life, like, you know, and like, I'm taking this class, I'm taking a Quran class right now with Dr. Omid Safi, who's like a scholar of Islamic studies. And anyway, it's a really enriching class. And he talks about like how in certain traditions, like they see the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as like a walking Quran. You know, this idea that like the Quran isn't just this book sent from heaven. Think about the sun's relation to the ninth, right? That's just kind of thrust upon us, and it's us, it's just gonna be something that like we figure out. But like this idea that like the prophet is like the walking Quran, so it's like this person is sent also to sort of model, you know, what this book is teaching. So like there's stuff around embodiment, right? And like
sorry
ways
to
of living. Sorry, go ahead.
Speak over you, but I'm just reminded of the Bible, and you know, within the Christian tradition, there's I forget what book it's from, but it says in the beginning there was the word logos, and the word became flesh, which is a kind of another example. And it's like becomes flesh through like the birth of God on earth through Jesus. And so there is this kind of element of like, what is, you know, the kind of ideal, the kind of almost platonic ideal of God, and then the embodiment of that on earth. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Now we're getting to that point where I was like, I know I like just drove down the highway like super, but what was the question?
I don't remember what the question was.
I think we were just riffing.
But you're you know, I was talking about the relationship of Mercury and the sun, and then you brought up this idea of image, and it reminded me of, you know, how humans to a large extent are kind of visual creatures. We learn through, you know, visualizing, even learning language, kind of bringing back Mercury.
Even astrology, right? Like, does this planet have sight, or does it witness, right? Like in the ancient Greek, this other house or this other planet, like, it's all optical.
And in my moon series, so many people, the suggestion they had for people was like, just go look at the moon, like experience the immediacy of that.
I don't want to tell people to go look at the sun for too long.
Right. And that's an interesting thing where like the sun is so vitality in the sun. It's like almost obvious, you know, like we need the sun for life. Without the sun and like us being the perfect distance from it, we would not have life. On Earth.
The distance thing is interesting, because like maybe I would tell someone instead to sort of, because I do this sometimes in my living room, because that's where the record player is, and sometimes I'm on my days off, I like to just sit and read. And like there's a bunch of plants in there, and like throughout the day I'll see them slightly move, or like kind of move towards the sun. As the sun moves across, right, like the sky, like they'll kind of like shift like that. So like that's a great way to get in touch with the sun, is seeing how it affects like plants in someone's garden, or like plants in your home, like seeing how they follow it, or sort of you know, kind of like kind of change over time, you know, kind of like back enliven, or sort of like you know,
there's so many cultural images of like cats and the sun as well. Cats like kind of playing or laying in the in like the light that the sun casts, and people like kind of being mesmerized by that or commenting on it. Yeah, the thing I was thinking of was the relationship of kind of Venus and the sun, this other planet that's within the sun's orbit, so to speak, you know, doesn't move independently of the sun, but like, or can't get quite far away from the sun. It can only get, you know, like two signs away, and is associated with creative expression, perhaps. So there's this kind of visual element that comes with the sun. The sun gives us sight, provides illumination, and then like images are crafted or expressed in a certain way that can kind of give embodiment or give kind of an immediacy to the gnosis of the sun.
Yes, thank you. I feel like that tied up all of my that's beautiful. I have nothing to add to that. I just think that's wonderful. Yeah,
awesome, cool. Before we bear with me one moment while I pull up our questions. Yeah, do you have anything else that you'd like to say about the sun and what the sun means to you as an astrologer?
Yeah, this thing about the soul, this thing about like
embodiment. What is the soul to you? Because I know within the medieval Islamic tradition, there's a differentiation between the soul and the spirit. And I think in English, a lot of these terms can kind of get mixed up or made synonymous. But what do you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, it's so funny because in my head, I'm like thinking about like, I'm thinking about like Plotinus, but then I'm also thinking about like Ibn Sina, like, and there's like this progression of like how the soul's been thought of and like these sort of like Islamic philosophers, and like it's a lot for me to keep in my head, but I would say like I really like the idea that like sometimes like for Plotinus, I think it's Plotinus, here's the part where I might mix everybody up, but like I'm gonna say it's Plotinus, like he says like the soul doesn't need to seek union or contact with the intelligible because it just needs to sort of realize that it is always in contact. And like, I guess thinking about like this Quran class I'm in right now, like a lot of it too is like thinking about like a relationship to God that's actually like, it's always constant. It's always there. So it's like, like my teacher said something, it's like knowing the Quran is like a fish asking where the ocean is and then realizing where the ocean is.
Yeah. This is such an important point, I think, about God in general and like a relationship. You know, my experience is like, you know, like spirituality has been a vital thing in my life for a long time, like all of my adult life. Like, and I hear a lot of people, and I've had this as well, you know, where it's like, what is God? You know, it's like, there's this thing or whatever that I have to depend on for my life, but I don't even know what it is. And how do I reconcile that? How do I trust something I don't know? And I think that I've come to feel that, you know, like there's a whole thing that I think about just like knowing in general. I'm pretty skeptical. Like, you know, like I feel like there's within us just vast wells of being that we can never know within ourselves and within our relationships. And the important thing is like, I don't know my best friend. Like the important thing is that I have an experience of trust and love when I'm with them. And I think it's a similar thing with a relationship with God, where it's like, I don't understand God. I don't understand the totality of like what that is, but I have an experience of that. And that's the thing that's transformative. And that's the thing that's vital.
Yeah. And so like, there's that, and I think that's like, I guess I'm making, I don't know, like, but like, yeah, the sun is like, once I've linked it to like these ideas of the soul and like the Greek word nous and all this like stuff, where it's like it's actually become kind of hard to explain what the sun is, because it's so like in the body. It's like so like
And it feels so that like that that I that thing of like you can't look at the sun. It feels like it's almost a summation of what I'm trying to explain of like I don't like if I'm out on a sunny day in summer and I'm really basking in the beauty of like the sunlight, I'm not staring at the sun to get that. I'm feeling that on my skin. It's this kind of like not mediated but indirect experience of feeling versus like sight and knowing. It's like we can't stare at the sun, but we can feel its kind of warmth and beneficence.
Yeah, it
And
made me
that
thinking about
feels,
like the sign that your son's in being that sort of thing, right? Like, what are those sort of things that are those direct experiences of knowing, you know? It goes back to those like hyper specific memes. It's like, how do you know that? Like, because you probably lived through it or something.
Right, it's resonant for you, and you can relate to it.
Like, I think solar knowledge is a lot about like right ex the ex the experience, the experiential. Abu Mishar has this wonderful line where he says like Venus rules cleanliness, but the sun is the experience of feeling clean. So like me taking a shower, that's like like getting clean, like that's the act of cleanliness. But like how I feel when that water hits my body, I can't really explain that to another person unless they like themselves like get in the shower and feel that, you know, like, and I think that's like a very important dimension of the sun. But yeah, what we're saying, yes.
And there's a it reminds me of The Doors of Perception, if you've ever read that by Aldous Huxley, because
I should.
he's kind of talking about solipsism a little bit. And I think it relates to this experience, the subjective experience, because he talks about in that how we can't completely know what another person's like experience totally is. We can't completely get inside of their mind and know what their life is like. And I think that kind of speaks to the sun and the individuality that can become associated with the sun. The kind of like separation that can be associated with the sun. That kind of like interesting again, we're kind of talking about Saturn and the sun, but there's a kind of isolation associated with both of them at either end, kind of the far out and like the extremely hot. I feel like that's resonant to the sun and kind of individuality.
Yeah, and then the
And
Chaldean order thing of like then us acting as a bridge to the sun to like share it with the collective. Right.
And again, like the relationship of the sun and the planets closest to it, Mercury and Venus, doing that through the spoken word and communication, and doing that through like sublimation of images or what have you. It's beautiful.
Cool.
Any additional thoughts about the sign of Capricorn and what it means to you? And I would also love, like, I know that you're a big, you're a poet, you're kind of like a lover of cinema. I'm curious if you have any stories that come to mind or myth that comes to mind that kind of embodies Capricorn for you.
Yeah, I always think of like I guess like we'll get into it a lot more, but like there's this film by Chantal Ackerman, The Meetings of Anna, and it's about like a filmmaker. I guess like the plot is kind of like this filmmaker is going to like this film festival to present her film, and on the way she's on a train through Europe. And she stays in a lot of different hotels, and she's kind of lonely the whole time and alone, and like and again, like thinking about like malefics and experiences that might bring you towards like experiences of extremes or sort of like isolation or sort of contemplation. I feel like that's a really powerful film about like all of those things, but also like again, like a character who embodies a stranger or someone passing through, like, again, like the solstice, like all of the winter, you know, like these places of like liminality, like Saturn is the planet of liminality. And I wish people spoke about that a little bit more, like, people who are like in between, you know, like Saturn rules the ocean, because like the earth might be known and then like the ocean's unknown. So it's like, you know, people in between are like, you know, people who have jobs by the shore are thought to be like Saturn's children, because like they operate between those like places of the known and the unknown and the seen and the unseen. And like, you know, I like that movie. I also like, he's a Capricorn too. His Pedro Costa, he's like a Portuguese filmmaker. All of his films like are master classes in what the 12th house is, like especially like Vanda's room, which is literally just shot like in one room, like the entire thing. It's like 2 or 3 hours or something, but it just follows, it's just like this person talking to the camera, and like, yeah, and he's right, he makes like films about like a neighborhood that eventually gets demolished, but it's like a heavily like immigrant Cape Verdean neighborhood. He has like a trilogy about it, like, yeah, this awareness he has of like the other, but also like being amongst them and sort of yeah, like becoming part of those communities in a lot of ways. Like there's a lot of in his like films about death and grief, and like he has really interesting relationships with his actors, where like the actors' lives kind of become the films, but and they sort of like, you know, make interesting decisions within that of how things go. Yeah, I would say the films of Pedro Costa, The Meanings of Anna by Chantal Ackerman, Oasis, a film by Lee Chan Dong. It's like a love story. Yeah, I don't want to say too much of like, because again, this is a solar thing where like these films should be experienced. So I'm just going to tell you what they are, and like hopefully people sit with them and just kind of have their own thing versus me mitigating or kind of saying too much about them. But that's some stuff I would recommend people sort of spend time with.
Absolutely. Yeah, the one thing that came to mind again when we were talking about like the forgotten is again the extremity of Saturn, and Saturn and Capricorn being symbolic of the extremes in society of like those without homes, the forgotten, and also the very wealthy. And like the both and of Saturn, I feel like does really kind of communicate, or the both and of representing both of those things does kind of speak to a kind of mystery of Capricorn, where to get back to that kind of sea goat image, which I really resonate with. Again, like growing up as a Capricorn son, I didn't really want to relate to that. And maybe that's partially because like I'm a Sag rising with Jupiter and the sun, like very closely opposed. But like, I felt a lot more Sagittarian than I did the kind of Capricorn sun. And I didn't want to be those things of like, you know, ambitious and like money hungry and like on my grind, like all of those kinds of things. And that's kind of like, I think the image of Capricorn just as the goat, separated, you know, Jason Holly in his earth signs class, like talks about when we talked about Capricorn, we talked about that kind of separation that can happen between the earth and these kinds of like sacred waters that Capricorn was originally associated where life kind of comes to be, like the Adzu it's called. And I think that the connection or the kind of tale and its association with water is so important, when thinking about Capricorn or like healing almost as a Capricorn. The importance of like the mountaintop with the goat, but also like the depths of the ocean that the sea goat can go to when it has its tail. And like, what wisdom do we find at the bottom of the ocean? And where can we bring that? You know, and I wonder how much of our conversation that we're having, like, or for me, it feels very resonant of like the ways in which my Capricorn sun, the Capricorn and the Sag stuff interplay, the Jupiterian and the Saturnian kind of interplay. It's like, how do I see through the sun? And then like, how do I serve through like my Jupiter placement or what have you, like this desire to be generous and to give. And it's like, how can I take that wisdom from the ocean, from the water of life? And then how can I transform the earth with it? How can I be of service and construct structures that are just and equitable as a result of it? So that's something that came to mind when, again, thinking about, you know, like the earth and the water of Capricorn.
Yeah. It's making me think about, like, again, something I would say about Capricorn is like extraordinary patience and endurance. And like, sometimes like, you know, again, the thing about this might have like a title of like the winter episode or something, because I keep bringing up winter since you like brought it up. But like, yeah, like we all go through like maybe metaphorical winters in our lives, or like, right, where like the sun gets really dim. And like, part of that is also like a responsibility and duty to then tell other people what you learned through your winter, and also pay attention to what older people say about their winters. And that sort of that sort of being like, you know, things that might help other people survive or help them push through. And like, again, Capricorn's cardinal, and like, I really love that connection to transgression, you know. And I feel like for me, the big Capricorn idol for me since I was like a tween or something was like Susan Sontag. And like, she's like, I love having dissenting opinions. And she's like, I love being uncomfortable. She says that being uncomfortable is like the best place for me to learn something. She's like, I crave being uncomfortable. And I'm like, no one else but a Capricorn would say that. But like, right, the like going to the edge of places, to the extremities of places, like being pushed there, like this kind of personal, but like, right, like Saturn. You know, most astrologers open my chart and they see my Saturn in Aquarius in its own term, in its own decan, in its own bound. I mean, it's rejoicing, like it's got all the points. And like, we're like, what was it? What is that like? I mean, like, some really real things that's brought into my life is like, it's the Saturn in the 12th. I mean, I am a refugee. For most of my life, I've had refugee status. Like, when Trump became president was like the moment I became a citizen. Like, it was very scary. Like, you know, so like having these experiences of exile, of being like ripped away from home, like it's a lot of the 12th, like those extremities of knowing that. But like, I feel like, you know, a lot of my clients are like, you know, people who, again, are liminal like that, in the sense of like, I get a lot of like clients who want to talk about the 12th and homecomings, returns to their places, you know, speaking about diaspora, like, you know, like the ruins, you know, coming from a war-torn country myself, like I'm able to empathize with people on a whole different, it's like, these are the things I know. And like, I'm often older and can be like, look, this is like, there's stuff coming ahead, like, don't worry. Yeah. Or like, you know, like I think about Capricorn and like all of these medieval texts, they say things about like being keepers of secrets. And like, that might just kind of like, for most people, they might flip through that, but like, there's something really sacred about who can keep a secret, who cannot, who's let in on the secret. Often like secrets are sometimes like, yeah, full of shame and like, you know, come from, again, these malefic experiences of like otherment or being far flung out or othered or just like struggle, you know, that and like, being able to hold that for other people is like a deeply sort of Capricornian thing in the medieval sort of sense. It's like, I mean, Dr. Alomi talks about like the communal tax that Muslims pay, the zakat. It goes into this trust that's for the community. So like, the reason you pay that like every year, so then all the money that gets kind of collected goes to widows or the hungry, the poor, the homeless. So it's like this sort of thing where like Islam is always constantly reminding you who's being left out, you know, like who, and how do we provide, and how do we sort of, as Capricorns, like, yeah, kind of keep the secrets and kind of meet people in the deep water in these sort of places and be like, no, I get what that is, you know, like, I was 5 years old crying in front of my cake, being aware of my mortality. Like, nothing you say is going to shock me. Like, I'm fully in the death of winter and like the dying and the rot and the decay. And like, that's maybe like a sacred thing to be for better, for worse, you know? Like, I mean, some experiences just universally suck. Like, that's fine. But I think also, like, again, like, I love being a stranger, and I love like the idea of Valen saying the 12th is the stranger, and like finding other strangers. I think my Saturn return was so much about like what, like sobriety and all that stuff, but like also like, yeah, realizing that like being a stranger is actually like one of my biggest superpowers. It allows me to like, you know, have a wider relationship, or you know, just kind of like, and also, yeah, find the others, you know, and right. The Motley Crue or something. And like, Capricorn loves difference, you know, like there's famous delineations of like Venus and Capricorn. Al-Hayat says they shall marry someone of a different culture or status or way of life, and they will build new traditions. That's beautiful. Like,
yeah,
Capricorn has this like deep appreciation for like different experiences, things that are different, maybe are kind of like not loved by others, or kind of, you know, it's like, but that it's like important, you know.
I love, thank you so much.
Sorry, that was like huge, like,
no, not at all. I love everything that you said, and I think it's so beautiful. Sun and Capricorn and the associations we've talked about of like the sun just being with you, you know, the sun just shining its light. It doesn't have to do anything but be present. And there's something I think very powerful about bearing witness and presence, you know.
And Saturn as like the great witnesser, often.
Yeah.
Like literally, that's the term, like the one, the planet who witnesses.
And I think even about like, you know, I went to a Jesuit university, and there was a lot of Catholic social teaching that tended towards, you know, a lot of these kind of Saturnian ideals that we're talking about of like service to the marginalized, service to those that have been wronged. And even I'm reminded of like, I don't know if I'm going to include this because I can't remember exactly, but it's like what the name of the event is, but I think it's like the teach-in, and part of it is like bearing witness to what they call the Salvadorian martyrs, and literally just saying like their name and then saying present, which feels very like, it just reminds me of this idea of like the importance of presence and the importance of bearing witness to those Saturnian things that in life are challenging, that people feel alone in. And like, I know for me how important it is to just be able to put that out and have others just bear witness to it.
And
how transformative that can just be, to not have to live in isolation or live in the shame of the secret. You know what I mean? To be able to share the secret, to have those, which, and to be able to kind of witness others' secrets as well.
I mean, I hope you keep that in. I think that's wonderful. I mean, thinking about like Capricorn and like world astrology being like the signifier for hospitals, you know, these places where, you know, we can go in and like be care for, you know, it's like these communal centers often, you know, like thinking a lot again about like associations with like scientists, physicians, and mages, right? Like these are people who get to the bottom of things,
right?
Like, and they're trying to sort of see first, right? Like you have to see before then you can kind of like operate or something, or, you know, kind of be with people. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's like that thing about like having the work associations of Capricorn really be about duty, you know, and duty to others. And yeah, like funny enough, like if you would have asked me like who I thought my clients were going to be. I was art world. I used to be in the art world, like poets, like, and sure enough, that's a lot of my clients. But like now, almost half a decade into practice, like again, my people are like, you know, trying sobriety for the first time. A lot of them, like a lot of they're refugees, just like me. Like they're people who have lived through like these sort of Saturnian experiences and are kind of looking for language, looking to be seen, looking to be witnessed. And sometimes it's not so important for me to, I don't know, like release from the lot of whatever. It's actually just me listening, you know? And again, that that Capricorn sort of the secret keeper or sort of the one who sort of walks alongside you or something, but like through the sort of witnessing role.
It just reminds me of, or it begs kind of the question of Saturn's association with grandparents and like why we love our grandparents, you know? And it's this kind of like,
they also show you that like it's so like it's a possibility to live that long. And like like I've been thinking about this recently, like in terms of like one of the, every rejoicing planet will deliver a gift regardless of its dignity.
Right.
And so Saturn in the 12th is like being embraced and elevated by elders. And like, funny enough, all of the older poets that I know are like in their 70s and 80s. Like those are my teachers. Like I've never really had, I mean, I have peers, but like it's very, actually most of the poets I know are like old. And I remember being at this dinner and like it was all these old poets in New York City. And like someone was like, does it ever stop being embarrassing to like read your drafts at the open mic or something? And it's all these old people just starting to laugh in unison. It was kind of like, my friend was a little embarrassed, but like one of those people who, you know, these old people was just like, no. And that's the wonderful part. It's just like those like nuggets of just like hard won truths or hard won wisdoms that like, also just seeing like old queer people to me is like incredibly encouraging, right? Because you think, yeah, you go through so much and you're just like, okay, but like there's that person down the street who like has made it to 80. Like there's like a futurity there that's like through age that's so it just opens a lot, I think.
It opens possibilities. Yeah, and something that's coming to mind in relation to your chart that I can't stop thinking about, and I hope you don't, like, I hope you're not upset or offended.
No, I'm super
by me bringing this up. And we can also like cut this out if you like, but you identified yourself as a refugee. Saturn rules the 12th, you know, which is associated with refugees, and also the 11th, which is associated with like certain kinds of government and citizenship. And like the more kind of, you know, it's where Jupiter joys. It's kind of like the good, the house of good spirit, those kinds of things. And it just feels interesting with your Saturn in the 12th house that the place where you had to leave, you had to leave and come to another place because of the place you came to. So like so much of Central American history is tied up with the U.S. involvement in it, which I've studied a bit. And, you know, I'm kind of most familiar with the U.S.'s role in the Salvadoran Civil War and the repercussions of that. And so it feels, you know, interesting, feels like a bit of an insensitive word almost because of how awful the U.S. is involved, you know, like what that kind of caused. But it does feel astrologically kind of relevant to your chart.
And I talk about that all the time. I mean, like, thinking about, like, I think there is this relationship between the 12th and the 4th. Menilia says so, like, Saturn has its share in the 4th. He's the only one that says that, but, like, I really, really think that's, like, true, you know? And so if we think about the 12th as, like, the Chepso, Pedaceres, all these people saying, like, it's the womb place or it's, like, stuff before you were born.
Right.
Yeah, like, I was born in the last year of a civil war, like, that's looming in my 12, you know, like, my family, like my dad's village was like totally burned to the ground by like US funded death squads, you know, like, and right, then they moved to the city and it was just like, you know, classism and like, right, they're farmers and like, so wrong accent and like, you're from the communist side of this country, so we don't trust, you know, it's like social death is such a like, I guess that's like a academic concept for like people who live on like the margins of a state or like sometimes are stateless or something. And I come from that side of my country where like, you know, it's like, oh, the guerrillas are over there, like they're the bad Salvadorians. I mean, I'm not a nationalist by any means. Like I always say, like, yeah, like I have no ties to, I would never wave a flag. I think that's like, you know, but it comes from this, and it comes from like, you know, my family living on the borders of like Honduras and the Salvador. So like, depending on the decade, you know, my aunt has two passports. And one of the funniest conversations I've ever had is just her showing me both of them and be like, they're both useless. Like who cares about the nation? Like we're the people of the mountains. Like, you know, it's like, but like that distrust between like state power and like, you know, and so it's like, right. Like I come from these liminal people who like, depending on who's winning that territory and what decade, they have different papers, but both of those countries neglect us. They hate us. Like, you know, we're seen as like the other, even within that. So like, even that's part of like that Saturn in the 12th of like coming from people who are even othered within the nation or sort of, and that's always been super explicit to me, you know, in the way that like my parents talk in their like rural accent, right? Like, or like the way, yeah, like I remember like meeting like a middle-class Salvadoran in the city and then being like, oh, what do you eat growing up? And I said all these things and they were like, oh, that's like plantation food. I was like, that's crazy. I was like, oh, I was like, in the moment I realized like, oh yeah, right, like this is like coffee, but like it's just all these things, right, about like Saturn and the extremes, right? And like that's always been super real. And so right, it rules my 11th, and I find like that so much of my community ends up being like people who have gone through similar things like that, you know, and like finding a lot of like again, it's like being a pirate to me is like there's this wonderful Colombian theorist, Ernesto Bassi, and he wrote this book called like The Ocuous Territory, something like that. But it's about pirates in Central America, the Caribbean, and South America. And it's this idea that like pirates are cosmopolitan and they're sort of always fucking with like ideas of the nation. And they're like not, they have the crime of flying all flags. So it's like this idea that like pirates and we're always sort of causing trouble for like viceroys or because they're just not interested in the nation. And like, they would like pick up Dutch and then they would get kidnapped and on a Spanish ship and they would learn Spanish and then they end up in Jamaica. And then, you know, so it's like, I really relate to that sort of like, I love being, again, the stranger, the other, the thing that the state can't read. My family are those people. They're those people on documents, you know, and like, there's a real power to that, you know, of like, being slippery and then also finding other people who are in those sort of places. And also I would say, you know, the 12th has a relation to the occult that kind of gets like it's not talked about enough, I think, like the 12th in like secret societies and like Valens and all those people, but that becomes like, right, like, you know, again, these like assignations, these secret meetings of like wizards and mages. And like one of the funniest delineations of like the super powerful Saturn ruling my 12th in the 12th ruling my 11th is the fact that like a lot of my friends are like really well-known or powerful occultists. So like that's kind of funny too. It's like and then and part of those relationships being like things like having access to astrological translations that no one else sort of does, or like that, again, like that 12th thing of like we're in the forest and you have to be initiated to come here and like we're meeting in secret, or like that's been super, yeah, I just leaped from one thing to
no, it's all good. That kind of leads into what I wanted to talk about a little bit, of like, what does it mean for you? Like, I guess one way we can jump into this is like, what house is the sun in your chart? And what house does the sun rule in your chart? And how do you feel like those things kind of color or change or modulate the experience of your son.
Mm. Yeah, my son's in the 11th and it's like very conjunct that Mars. I have a lot of trouble, honestly, thinking about my sixth house and the relationship to the
me
sun.
Too.
I don't know why that's so foreign to me. It could be that, like, the thing with Mars is, again, a problem with authority. I've always had that sort of thing of, like, fighting with authority. If we see the six as a place of, like, conflict, maybe, or, like, rebellion, you know? Like, that's a lesser-known thing of the six, and maybe that Mars is, like, tyrants or something, like, or... I don't know, but yeah, like I think a lot about like the sun and that conjunction to like Mars and Mars in my ninth and sort of like, again, like these things around like religion and spirituality and them kind of locking in to each other. And I think about them a lot in relationship to, again, like magic and like sort of like sorcery, you know, like an exalted Mars is a classic placement for like a sorcerer. Master sorcerer in like medieval Islamic texts, right? Goes back to that thing about like the unseen and sort of like the hidden and sort of the patience that a sorcerer needs to have, but also like, you know, it's kind of like these things of like being on the edges, you know, and kind of like things being passed down through like secret initiations or something, or through contemplation, right? Like I've had this like thing where I've always wanted to sort of enter a monastery or something at some point in my life, or like that would be an interesting like Saturn in the 12th ruling the 11th, like finding brotherhood through like the sort of smaller kind of secret group or something.
And I think like, you know, if you don't mind sharing, your Jupiter in the 9th ruling your ascendant, I feel like could come into, there's like a lot of these 11th, 12th, ninth themes that like are leading into like those first house themes of identity. So it kind of makes sense that you would have that kind of inclination, I suppose.
Also like the 12th is a travel house, like again these things about pilgrimage and going very far away. It's like long distance trips for short periods of time. It's like the Valens thing, but again it's a place where you're a stranger,
right?
You know, that's very present right now, because last night I booked a flight to Puerto Rico and it was just like you know, like wondering, like, you know, I could just go and recite Shahada here at a mosque in the town I'm at, but like,
yeah, it's so interesting you're going to Puerto Rico to do a kind of, one of the things I saw you post on Twitter is about like a kind of religious act.
Yeah, and it's funny because like my solar return that it just turned on has the moon and Jupiter co-present in the 12th in Taurus. So it's an overlay between my third house and the solar return 12. And so the third house being like the beginnings or like initiations or sort of rites of like religion, you know, it's like in the third we learn hadith, or like we learn the Torah, or like the building blocks, or like the sort of like everydayness of like spiritual matters, you know. So it's interesting that that is now my 12th. And what am I doing? I'm literally going to, I mean, it's, I'm Latin American, like it's culturally like Puerto Rico is not like too far, but it is sort of like, yeah, I'm like journeying far away for this like third house initiation into a religion, you know? Yeah. So that's interesting super cool. Too. Like the travel part of like, you know, religion and sort of the 12th sort of that, you know, the 12th is monasteries in ancient text. So it's sort of approaching it like that. Like I'll be reading a lot of like Ibn Arabi and Al-Ghazali and being really meditative and like, you know, this like Airbnb or whatever, like, but it's like needing to go very far out to sort of, again, get into the contemplation part of like the 12th.
I'm interested your kind of take on this, but that, you know, the 12th and the monastery, the isolated place, and the 9th is the pilgrimage. And like, I'm not even really, I don't have too much context about the pilgrimages place in Islam. And I know it's something you're like supposed to do once in your life. And I've seen pictures of Mecca, and it's not a very, it doesn't seem like an isolated place. It's like filled with people who are together praying and kind of like, you know, doing religious things. And so there's an interesting thing about the monastery and an isolation, even within an isolated place. And then the kind of pilgrimage aspect of traveling far to be with many people in a common religious space.
Yeah. And I think like the toll for me is also like familial. Like this is probably going to ruffle some feathers in my Catholic family, you know?
Yeah.
But it, and that's part of the, that's probably the main reason why it's like, I want to be in a place where I make this choice that feels like my own. Like my dad's Catholic, my mom's Pentecostal. Grew up with like being forced to go to both churches and like, and then just kind of being left. And like, I don't know, for me, a lot of this too is like feeling like I'm choosing something that's mine. And like,
that
heavy contemplation part of it is like deeply part of this initiation or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I the 12 is a lot of like, not going to sugarcoat it, but I think like, it's so funny that online Saturn's either like super horrible or like super good, or like, because again, Saturn in extremes. But I do think like Saturn is a benefic in my chart. Like if you look at its dignity, if, you know, Abu Mishar has a procedure actually to tell you if a malefic is acting as a benefic. And yeah, like my Saturn's clearly born in the day. Like, so like, yeah, these experiences of like going to monasteries, going to have religious, spiritual experiences in faraway places for a short amount of time. Like sometimes I see like 9th, 12th house things and solar returns quite often be like study abroad experiences. And those people will tell me like, wow, that like semester in Italy where I just like was learning Renaissance history changed my life. And it's like, oh, you have connections between your 9th and your 12th. And I look at the solar return when that happened and it's 9-12 stuff. So like that, that like, right, like that being far from your daily lived rhythms and giving into that experience of being the stranger, you know, like I like, right, like I might not be Italian and speak that language, but like there's a certain sort of opening up that happens when you can be unknown in that way.
Right. Yeah, there's an interesting thing, I think, with the 12th or with Caden houses of like this idea of falling away and as it relates to self, you know, because the 12th, the first and the second are in this kind of triad together. The self has to fall away to be recreated. So
which is a winter thing too, like,
yeah,
thinking about like winter, like, and I'm like looking at my house and I'm like, it's gonna snow, like where are the crevices that need to be patched up in the house? What linen needs to be sewed because that jacket is sort of not, you know, it's like winter makes you think about repair in the home and what you own. And it invites you to do that. It invites you to sort of close ranks and be like, you know, reparative in that sense. Like winter calls us to do that, or all, because it's part of surviving and it's part of like the metamorphosis into the new thing, which is like the fishtail part.
Right. Yeah. And again, it's like the goodness of negative thinking in some ways. Yeah. We're just like, oh shit, you know, if I don't do this, I'm gonna be out in the cold kind of thing, you know. Yeah. So yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm just thinking as well about I got a solar return reading with you. And my 12th house was activated in some way, and then by monthly perfections, I think the 4th house was being activated, or maybe the 12th part of the.
I remember asking you, like, are you going to move? And you were like, no, I don't think so. And then I moved on to other things it could mean. But then you had. Yeah. Are you talking about the move?
Yeah, I'm talking about the move, because I did move far away from where I was back to where I grew up in New York. And interestingly, I think Saturn in the solar return. No, maybe it was in the third, but the lot of Nemesis was in the 4th. So it was like challenges around home throughout the year in general. So yeah, the lot of fortune was in the 12th, like the last degree of my solar return 12th house. And you were like, yeah, you might be moving far away. And yeah, when
for I better think when, or for worse, I think my like one of my like super strong suits in prediction is always when people are traveling. Mm-hmm. Or relocating.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's my moon in the third, Jupiter in the ninth thing, but like I've never been wrong about that. Mm-hmm. Like I could be off about other things, but I'll always see like, yeah, you're gonna be somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, whoa. I'm just reminded of that. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Do you want to talk about aspects that the sun makes in your chart? And
sure.
Do you think that
I don't
be
look at my
discuss?
chart super much, so like you might have to remind me what my sun aspects.
Sure.
Yeah, like I'm so
So
busy preparing other people's stuff that like I sometimes forget
I hear
even
you.
like.
Yeah, you have that close Mars conjunction, which I'm curious, like if you feel like most of the, you know, like when Mars is in close aspect to any planet, it's maltreating that planet, but Mars has such dignity in Capricorn. I'm wondering if it's alleviated. In addition, I'm really curious to hear your take on the combustion of Venus and Mercury across the sign boundary, because they're towards the end of Sagittarius. And then additionally, you are in a pretty close trine, sun and moon trine. That's your moon is applying to your sun by minutes. And then, yeah, there's like a loose kind of sextile with Jupiter.
Jupiter. Yeah. You know, funny enough, like I think a lot about like the sun and Mars and my father. A lot of the father is in Aries. I'm not gonna go super into it, but like what might a lot of a parent signify when it's like a malefic out of sect Mars conjunct the sun, struggles with the father.
Yeah.
A lot of that goes back to like my dad even being like a child soldier. Sun Mars, grief, like the forgotten, all that stuff. So that's like the loudest way that Sun Mars conjunction comes out. For me, it's actually like do the stuff with my dad, which I think is important to say too, right? Like not everything in the chart is like always just us, but like the greater world that we exist in. And it's like, wow, this is showing up as like a parent figure, right? Again, I think like that exalted Mars ruling the ninth and it being out of sect. I mean, it's in the chariot, so like that actually manifests as like my lifelong sort of opposition or sort of like going to battle with like clergy in the Catholic Church. Like I remember like my first communion, I was like, oh, there's like angels in here, and like, oh, they're casting lots, oh, they're doing magic, and they're like, no, you can't talk about that. Like it's just like I'm getting in trouble consistently in Sunday school for like wanting to know the more sort of esoteric sort of mystical sides of like Christianity and like,
because
and
they're
then having
definitely
like
there.
Really, yeah, like having very like principal's office, like really like smackdowns back and forth, like theological, like, and I'm like 9 years old, like that's crazy. But it was just this like thing of like,
no, you're asking too many questions, kid.
Yeah. And it's like no one wants to tell me, and so I'm even more interested because I'm like, ooh, something's being
it's
hidden,
secret.
Like a Scorpio ninth, and like, yeah, so it just made me, you know, kind of even more sort of like towards those sort of things. But funny enough, it does show like me and arguing with like religious figures a lot of the time, or challenging them, or also like the sun. I'm still trying to figure out about that, like across the sign boundary combustion stuff. I do think it's alleviated by like those placements being in Sag.
Yeah,
so like they're already kind of like in that sort of fiery kind of thing. Then there's like this like Antitia stuff, so it's
right.
I mean, but Jupiter, sorry, that Venus Mercury conjunction is like obviously one of the things that makes me like a poet. It's like in the 10th house, co-present the midheaven. But I would say through those Antitias, like a lot of like what my work is about is the aftermath of war. And I remember having this kind of conversation with Patrick Watson once, where he was like, how does this Mars kind of show up as this like And I'm like, oh no, it's like literally me writing about like massacres and war and like, yeah, my familial experiences, especially through my dad's side of the family with all that stuff. So it actually becomes like, even the stuff I'm like waxing poetic about, right? Like Mars and it's like military sort of thing. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Mercury rules your fourth. And so it's like bringing something into the 10th. Yeah. And it's interesting too, with just like, just thinking about exaltation rulers, Venus ruling your first by exaltation. So like,
it's also the bound lord of my ascendant. Yeah.
Yeah. So it has a huge kind of role in your identity and your personhood and the kind of combination of those fourth house and first house topics and being in the 10th house, that place of visibility. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Yeah,
funny enough, funny enough, one of the pieces I'm like most famous for, this is actually an art piece, but it was like my first art piece in a museum. Was when I was like 21, and it was like, it's a piece about me and my sister, who I have many siblings, but this is like a sibling who the war separated us. So like, I hadn't seen her, and like, I didn't grow up with her. Like, it was just like distant phone calls. And it's like a performance art piece at the Queen's Museum where we talk on a phone for like the length of a calling card, but it's actually like, and then, you know, it's kind of on speaker. So like, it's a public conversation actually. But like, it was like that performance kind of, we finally said things that like were kind of taboo, of like, I don't really know you, and like, I feel distant from, but also like mourning how painful that distance is. And I mean, after that art piece, like both of us got a lot closer, and like, I think it really healed our relationship, but we had to like really like name the stuff of like the trauma that like has kept us separate or whatever. But that's a funny thing where like, right, it's like that Mercury, Venus, and Titia is like the art. And then like that thing with Mars too, of like conflict or sort of things around loss and war. And like, I mean, that's like, if I die tomorrow, like that art piece is in like art history textbooks for like,
wow,
you know, if you open up a textbook about like contemporary art in Central America, like that piece is there. It's like canonical. It's like my big thing or whatever. It's That's also what incredible. Jump-started like my art career in my 20s, which I've since like, I do poetry now, but that's a whole thing. But like, yeah, it's even funny that like things brought up to the midheaven, like it's also like, yeah, that sort of stuff, you know.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'm just being reminded of kind of astrologically, I think like one of my last questions I have for you, I'm thinking of the relationship of, you know, the ruler of the third being averse to the third. And you talked about like the sixth, like how you don't really think about that so much. And like the sun, you know, for us Capricorn suns, our sun is averse to the plant, to the house that it rules. And so I'm just like curious if you feel like the aversion of the ruler of the house, given its placement, if that kind of brings up anything for you. Or
I think it's me ignoring a lot of health things or illness things, for which I'm like, I hate to admit, but like, I don't know. It's a kind of like Tony Soprano kind of thing where I'm like in the doctor's office and they're like, what's wrong? And I'm like, none of your business. Like, I don't, and I hate that. It's so masculine and gross and dumb. And, but it's just like, there's just something about me where like, even like getting me to take medicine, I'm not like, you know, like conspiracy theory or whatever, but sometimes I'm just like, whatever, it's a cold, it'll go away. So sometimes and my lot of courage is in Leo in the sticks. So like, sometimes having your lot of courage, wherever it falls, will be a place where you tend to take risks that are sometimes unwise. So like, sometimes I kind of do like put things off health wise, or like I dread doctor's visits, or like I have sort of a blasé attitude to like certain health things that like I pay for later, or like, you know, I don't know. Like, I think that's one way that like it kind of shows up in that aversion of like, oops, like I've ignored this because the ruler can't see this house. Yeah.
And it's just interesting to think about the ruler of the third in the 10th. So like siblings having some role in your kind of public persona, with the moon in the third ruling the fifth. So that somehow relating to art and creativity, perhaps. So it's just, it's interesting to see how all those things maybe come together. Cause it's like, okay, if the ruler of the third is averse, perhaps there's like, maybe there's a challenging relationship with a sibling or just like a non-existent relationship. And it's like, what can change that? What actions can be taken that might alleviate that?
Yeah. Funny enough, like having the moon in the third too, like there's another art piece with the same sister where like I found a letter she sent me in like the late 90s. It was like freshly in that separation. It's just like about how much she misses me, blah, blah, blah. But I never, and I remember I found these photographs and I was like, what are these photos? And there were photos I took because I wanted to like then mail them to her in response, but I never did. And so like the art piece is literally just like the letter framed and then like a bunch of the photographs that I took as like a 5-year-old or whatever next. So it completes the conversation. So even that art piece is like sort of like speaking to that aversion, but like through the moon and mail, like bridging that and sort of, and that was a pretty seminal work for me too. It was like in this group show, what was it called? It's like Boston Art 1970s to the present. It's like the one time I was in the same room with like Nan Goldin, like across the hallway. Wow. Yeah, it was like a big deal. Cool. And I was like, but it was that piece. And it was like, funny enough about communication in the third, but also like completing a conversation that like had for more than 20 years kind of never clicked through these like archival materials of like found photographs and like this letter I got.
Cool. All right, Oscar, do you have any suggestions for someone that's new to astrology or planetary relationship in reference to their relationship with the sun?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just like that, like I mean, going to like literally taking in the sun, the vitamin D thing, like that might be really nice. Like things that make you feel embodied, you know, like whatever that means to you. Like I said, like, right, Abu Mishar says Venus is cleanliness, but the sun is this experience of like feeling that.
Yeah. So
like, yeah, maybe think about like what sign your sun is in, who the ruler is, and sort of start to maybe plan ways where you can kind of embody that, like take an approach like an actor would or something, or kind of like I don't know, thinking of ways you can do that. Like I guess I have one for Capricorn actually that's very specific.
I would love that.
Yeah. Like this is our episode, like everybody else figure it
we
out,
we can have this, it's okay.
So Al-Hasib, who's an astrologer that I really really love, he writes a lot about like occupations, and he gives like, or like talents and skills, and it's very useful. Al-Hasib has this delineation for fishermen and hunters where he says like, wow, it's escaped me. But it basically, it's this like thing where like in the chart, you have to have like Mars and Saturn in view of each other, and then like a positive relationship to the ascendant. And that makes someone like a master fisherman or hunter. And like, maybe like, fishing could be a Capricorn activity, because again it's the blessing of like both malefics, like the patience, knowing when to strike, the contemplation of being in a boat in the middle of like a lake or something. Maybe that's like an activity that'll get you closer to the Capricorn sun thing, is like fishing or something.
Amazing, thank you for that. I love that personally.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add? Do you have any imparting thoughts about the sun before we go?
I don't think so. I feel like that feels like nice as to wrap up. I just think the conversation was so rich and great. And I love that you have this background in philosophy too. Like, and we were able to talk about sort of those more like other sides of the sun perhaps mm-hmm. too. And like, yeah, I don't know. I just like where we went, you know, I always think I'm always like, okay, I'm logging into this podcast. Like, here we go. Like, but I think, I don't know, when the other person's a really good conversationalist, like, I think it just flows and it fits. Mm. So thank you so much for having me and inviting me, and super grateful.
Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Yeah, where can we find you, Oscar? And is there anything that you're working on you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, people can find me on Twitter and Instagram under Cielo Suelo. On Twitter, it's Cielo Suelo. On Instagram, it's Cielo Suelo Astrology. Okay. It's just like, you know, Cielo is sky, Suelo is ground. So it's like above and below, that sort of thing. Mm. But yeah, it's Cielo Suelo, and then that's how you spell that. Mm-hmm. Also, you could just write Oscar Moises Diaz into a Google. You'll find me. Mm-hmm. CieloSoloAstrology.com. I am teaching a little workshop on the lots associated with like love for the Aquarian. Oh my God, I don't want to butcher this association's name because they've been so lovely. But who are they?
That's really soon, right?
Yeah, that's on the 8th. Okay. People can still sign up. You'll get the recording regardless. It's the Aquarian Organization of Astrologers. Cool. I believe they're based out of Kansas. And so talking about the lots and like hobbies and and love. And that should be really interesting. My books are kind of closed for January, but like will probably be open for February. I'm always sort of consulting. It is my full-time gig. So if people want a reading, they can just hit me up. Yeah. I think that's all that I got going on. Oh, people can check out A Mountain Astrologer, the Capricorn soul issue that just came out. There's a conversation between me and the great scholar Dr. Olomi about like desire, sex, queerness in medieval astrology. If people want to check that out. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I'll be sure to link all that in the show notes. And as someone that's gotten a reading from Oscar, I would definitely highly suggest getting one. So follow Oscar on Twitter and keep track of when his books are open. Oscar, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a really amazing conversation. And I hope we can talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
To support the show by donating or becoming a member, please visit my website, which is linked in the show notes. And please subscribe to the show wherever you listen. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter. See those links in the show notes as well. If you have any questions or feedback on the show, please feel free to contact me via my website or email me at sbalhorary@gmail.com. In the show notes, you can also find links to astrologers and resources that we touched on in this episode. Thanks for listening to the show. I'll see you next time.